Good evening. In the news tonight, President Barack Obama met with Cuban President Raul Castro. The New York City Council is poised to vote on two highly controversial housing proposals. Critics speak out. Protesters came out in New York City in force against Donald Trump. It's the 13th anniversary of the war in Iraq. We hear the voices of anti-war activists and Iraq veterans against the war. And environmentalist Bertha Caceres is remembered in an action in front of the Honduran mission. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, March 21st, 2016.
Señor Presidente Barack Obama.
President Barack Obama and his family are in Cuba. Obama was welcomed today by Cuban President Raul Castro.
We are pleased to welcome you on this, the first visit of the President of the United States of America to our country in 88 years.
At a news conference with President Castro, President Obama says there is enormous hope that a bridge can be built between Cubans in the U.S. and in Cuba.
There are family ties and cultural ties that are so strong, and I think everyone would benefit from those ties being reestablished. One of the impediments to strengthening those ties is these disagreements around human rights and democracy. And to the extent that we can have a good conversation about that and to actually make progress, that I think will allow us to see the full flowering of a relationship that is possible. In the absence of that, I think it will continue to be a very powerful irritant.
Castro reiterated his government's long-stated position that it simply places different emphasis on a wide range of human rights, assuring its people free health care and education while restricting activities by people it considers to be U.S. agents acting to destabilize the government. The news conference was a highly unusual event for Cuba. The session was broadcast live on Cuban state television. The New York City Council is poised to vote on two highly controversial housing proposals tomorrow. They will impact the city for years. Zoning for quality and affordability and mandatory inclusionary zoning. Jay Fong with the Coalition to Protect Chinatown and the Lower East Side says this plan encourages more luxury development.
We're saying we don't need luxury development in these communities. These are affordable communities. We need protection. We need rezonings that are created from the people who are, have built these communities, that we are the people who should be deciding what kind of development we have in our communities.
Su-Ching Wong lives on the Bowery. She's about to be evicted from her apartment, and that's why she's fighting against this plan.
Now the landlord is trying to kick all of us out.
就是兩棟樓現在告到最高法院嘛,每間每戶都要收到那個信嘛.
Every single apartment now is being evicted in two buildings that the landlord owns.
Why?為什麼?為什麼他就是說他從第三層嘛,要趕我們走嘛,他是拆掉牆蓋蓋蓋蓋蓋樓吧.
The landlord wants everyone out so he can destroy the building and build much higher.
And so this is what's happening in Chinatown.
Oh, this is not the building, it's the whole. There are a lot of people in Chinatown being evicted and being forced out of this place. There are also people here from Madison Street.
Yeah. 还有八大道那边嘛,
In Brooklyn, 8th Avenue.
Yeah.
On the other side of the fence, Brooklyn Councilmember Robert Cornegi says getting developers to include affordable housing would be a win for his Brooklyn neighborhoods.
Right now, I have developers, as I speak, erecting monstrosities in my district. And fortunately for me, I do have landmarking, which preserves height and gives me height restrictions. But if I'm not able to prove to the constituents in my district that I have a governing ability to make sure that developers include affordable housing, everybody in my district is going to be forced out.
The Manhattan Green Party, however, wants New York City to stop tying housing needs of New York City residents to the interests of real estate developers. They say New York State and New York City should use public money to build affordable housing for low and moderate income New Yorkers.
We are being co-opted again. We are being tricked.
Bill Johnson says the city council votes are basically a fix for big developers in New York City, a sellout for the demands of true affordable housing.
What happens to all those who won't be accepted into what should be mandatory affordable housing for all people?
And then there's the question of what is affordable.
Absolutely, absolutely. In this New York City, which I've lived in all of my life, it used to be a worker city where there was a sense of one for all and all for one. And you would make sure that people were not living out on the streets because the rent was too high and the pay was too low. And that is certainly the way life is today. And shame on the city council people who allow this to exist and continue with their blessing. Shame on my council people from Staten Island, and shame on the other people who would not stand up with Inez Barron and stand up against this ridiculous vote tomorrow.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. On the streets of New York City, there's anger. Anger over front-runner presidential candidate Donald Trump. It's a city, according to civil rights attorney Leo Glickman, which knows Trump really well.
Trump is not who he sometimes pretends to be. We know him in New York City. We know he wanted the Central Park Five underground, and now they're free people contributing to our society. They've been totally exonerated. We know him for the racist and fascist that he is. Not to mention the fact, when you look at, here we are in front of one of his monstrosities. This is what he wants to turn the America into. You know, some cheap gold-plated buildings to give the veneer of wealth, when in fact he's stealing the wealth from our people. So we need to tell people, we need to be out here. The rest of the country doesn't know him as well as we do.
The world will be a worse place, and America would really lose out as a power nation if Trump gets to power.
Bridget Lielden is from Norway. She stands in the crowd of anti-Trump protesters with her child on her shoulders.
This year it has been kind of just a comedy, basically. Because, I mean, I think nobody outside America would ever have thought that Trump would be a serious candidate for presidency. And now we're really worried. It's scary to think of that kind of, you know, a hateful and well, crazy guy actually being in charge of the most important country in the world.
According to Glickman and some others, Trump is feeding into the fixation in our society on violent entertainment.
It's a commentary on our society, on social media, and on you know, on wrestling, on all kinds of things that we have today. It certainly is. He's running a campaign by tweeting. And people are reacting to it. And people, we're used to violence. Unfortunately, we've become used to violence and the threat of violence on social media. What we're hoping is to avoid that in our government.
Anti-Trump protesters came out in force to decry the policies of a man they say is anti-gay, anti-immigrant, fascist, racist, and dangerous.
He's like a clown right now, and so it has gotten to the point that it's so stupid, it's so ignorant.
Carolyn Mendoza is from Ecuador. She says Trump's policies are those of a white supremacist.
It's so like a void of like humanity and like how to actually govern, how to actually deal with people, that's why we are here. And so we're saying that it's beyond Trump, right? Like Trump is just like the perfect example. It's the exacerbation of that, but that there are so many others, so many Republicans, the ones in Congress, actually also, you know, general people sometimes in the streets that are like, you know, racist, that are like against immigrants coming here without knowing that we were displaced from our countries in the first place.
Eyes down with Trump. Freedom for all. We deserve to be in America. We deserve to be treated good if we're seeking asylum.
Paul, who is with QDEP, Queer Detainee Empowerment Project, came to the U.S. with his lover from Jamaica through Mexico. He said they ended up in detention with ICE Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Jamaica is the most homophobic country in the world. And so we ended up homeless in Jamaica, me and my lover. And so we got help and we came to America. And the experience has been so bad in Jamaica. And then we come to America, end up in ICE detention. And the treatment was worse than the treatment in Jamaica. We didn't have any rights. They didn't give us any lawyer, nothing. We want better rights for immigrants who are seeking asylum in this country, who are running, fleeing for oppression, and trying to get a better life. Down with ICE, down with Trump. Thank you.
Marissa with the Workers' World Party says we all know elections are not a solution, that change doesn't come from the ballot box, it comes from the streets.
And what happens every time that you hear about the travesty in Flint, Michigan? What happens when you hear about Mumia Abu-Jamal? What happens when you learn about Oscar and the need to free our political prisoners? What happens when you hear about yet another murder of our Black sisters and brothers? You want to march and you want to fight and you can't do it all, right? You can't go to all the activities. But what if we took these struggles to Cleveland in July and we told the Republican Party no more, no more of attacking our people, and then we took the demonstration to the Democratic Party convention in Philadelphia later on.
Ash Agony is a citizen journalist who has been covering protests across the city.
It's a nice big multiracial anti-fascist coalition going on here. It's really beautiful, actually. When I got off the train, I told my friend, I was like, "Why? I've never seen an anti-fascist rally like this big in New York, and like this many different groups out here. It's like really nice to see. Really nice."
Protesters say they will continue to protest the Republican frontrunner, that they'll continue to organize anti-Trump protests throughout the country. Meanwhile, it's the 13th anniversary of the U.S. war in Iraq. The U.S. military says it has placed a contingent of Marines at a small outpost in northern Iraq, this to provide protection for an Iraqi military base where U.S. advisors are present. The deployment was announced on Sunday, one day after a member of the unit, Staff Sergeant Lewis Carden of California, was killed by rocket fire. The Pentagon press secretary said several other Marines were wounded in the attack on what he calls a fire base near Makmur. The U.S. statement announcing the Marine deployment didn't say how many were sent, but two U.S. officials said it's between 100 and 200.
This is an emotional time, especially for our organization, Iraq Vets Against the War.
Jake Bridge is a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
Knowing that we've been at this for over 10 years now, And there's no end in sight, and we keep wading deeper and deeper into this never-ending conflict over there, wasting not just American lives, but hundreds and thousands of lives in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now in Syria and Yemen, and we keep doing more harm than good. So it's really, really hard to acknowledge that we're still there, and there's really no way for us to get out. None of the candidates, Republican or Democrats, have presented a viable plan to pull us out of there in the foreseeable future.
Veterans Against the Iraq War are countering Trump's hate-mongering at demos across the country, countering the attempt by the candidate to use vets as props.
The Republican Party, more so than the Democratic Party, use veterans as props. They like to say, "We love the vets, we support the vets," and generalities like that, and they try to claim the veteran support without actually asking for it. And we're trying to let these candidates know that we do not support this hate speech against Muslims, lumping all these groups together and saying they're all rapists or terrorists. We're not going to let them use the veteran idea to get them votes. We're not going to let them do it without a fight.
The effort by Iraq Veterans Against the War is part of a campaign called Vets Versus Hate. Also this weekend, protesters marked the anniversary of the U.S. into Iraq at a rally and march to Times Square's Military Recruitment Center. Zach Murphy has the story.
Strike now, throw more endless.
Deborah Sweet of the World Can't Wait an anti-war group that was originally founded to remove the Bush administration, says that the ramifications of the Iraq war have hit the Iraqi people the hardest because the country's infrastructure was quickly destroyed.
Every system in Iraq was destroyed in that invasion 13 years ago. We're talking about everything from the water and sewer systems to the electrical systems, the educational, the medical, the legal, the court system. It was all destroyed by bombs and by killing people, leaving a society that was open for civil war, which is in fact what the U.S. encouraged with its pouring billions of dollars into the hands of insurgents, one against the other. And what they did was spawn the Islamic fundamentalist insurgency across the Middle East today.
The climate was pretty hostile. If you were an anti-war vet, you were being called a traitor. The reaction was really polarized.
Matt Howard is the co-director of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and he says that veterans who deployed to Iraq and spoke out against the war after returning experienced a backlash from their peers.
Now, I would say, are really getting into, you know, the latter phases. 2009, 2010, it's clear that the consensus was that the Iraq war was a crime, and that people were really upset about the impact both of it and the way that, veterans were coming back without really the care that they needed. So I think what unfortunately this moment is a little bit different, in part because with the rise of groups like Daesh or ISIL, you have a justification that administration is using for continued occupation war in Iraq, and people are mobilized by that. They're mobilized in part by the fear of what that looks like. They're mobilized by the realities of those organizations, but also I think that without maybe the context of why they existed in the first place and how our continued impact in the region is really only emboldening groups like Daesh.
This string of endless wars and foreign entanglements has caused an increasing number of Americans to question the validity of these conflicts and how they benefit Americans at home. Zach Murphy, WBAI News, New York.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Earlier this month, 45-year-old environmentalist Berta Caceres was assassinated in Honduras. She was a Lenca Indian, a member of the Indian Council of People's Organizations of Honduras. She fought to recover and protect native land, one of 400,000 Lencas in Honduras and neighboring El Salvador. Caceres was the winner of the 2015 Goldman Environmental Prize for her role in fighting a dam project on a river the Lencas consider sacred. Her efforts, along with the Lenca community, successfully kept construction equipment out of the proposed dam site, but Caceres said her group was harassed. They were intimidated. She had long complained of death threats from police, the army, and landowners' groups. On March 3rd, she was murdered. Then on March 15th, one of her colleagues, Nelson Garcia, was shot to death. He was gunned down after he returned home from helping people who were evicted move their belongings from where they were squatting near Tegucigalpa. WBAI's Mitchell Cohen has more.
Berta Caceres condemned the military coup in 2009 that overthrew the constitutionally elected government in Honduras with U.S. government backing. And she condemned Hillary Clinton in specific for her role in supporting the ouster of democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya, even though the United Nations, the Organization of American States, and the European Union all condemned the removal of Zelaya, and the OAS voted unanimously to suspend Honduras from the organization. Caceres said Clinton helped legitimize and institutionalize the coup. Over the years, Berta worked tirelessly to protect land sacred to the indigenous peoples of her homeland. Berta's fellow organizer, Mexican-born Gustavo Castro, was also shot, but he feigned death as Berta died in his arms. Gustavo, the only eyewitness to the murder, is being held in the town of La Esperanza, ironically, hope in Spanish. And there is a growing international outcry demanding protection for Gustavo and condemnation of Berta's murder.
Asesinos! Asesinos!
Tell me what you want, what you really want. Justice!
Outside the Honduran mission to the United Nations, Berta Caceres' daughter gathered with other activists to pay tribute to her mother and push forward with her work.
We know that Berta was assassinated because she struggled for her people.
Sabemos también.
We also know that she struggled to protect nature and its bounty, the natural resources. We also know that she confronted an economic model, political elites and power interests, and military forces, security forces, police. Berta was up against it.
Activists like Sister Anya O'Connor are determined to continue Caceres' legacy to fight irresponsible development and to stand up for the rights of the Lenca people in Honduras.
Her spirit nurtures hope in solidarity. And Berta reminded us that when we nurture hope, we are capable of action. Let our action this night, this evening, be just, be urgent, be fruitful, and be hope-filled.
Sister O'Connor is with Sisters of Mercy of the Americas, an NGO anti-mining working group. Activists say many indigenous communities around the world are fighting mining and logging companies building illegal hydroelectric dams, like this activist from Mindanao in the Philippines.
We want justice, so militarization and plunder of resources must be put into an end. All over the world, there is growing resistance, struggle of people against injustices, against war for plunder. Therefore, we, the peoples of this world, we need to build and strengthen our solidarity to continue the struggle that Berta has started, to continue the struggle that Berta has offered her life, to continue the struggle of peoples for environmental and social justice.
Amnesty International says Honduran officials made mistakes in the investigation of the death of Berta Caceres. Erica Guevara with Amnesty says investigators didn't even try to get statements from people that Caceres had said had threatened her. Meanwhile, 62 members of the U.S. Congress are calling for an independent investigation into her death. Mitchell Cohn, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, March 21st, 2016. The news was produced with Zach Murphy, Mitchell Cohn, and Reggie Johnson. I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.